Welcome to NTD News Today. Here are today's top stories. The world awaits President Trump's reciprocal tariff announcement today. What global leaders are saying. Wisconsin voters have elected liberal Susan Crawford to the state Supreme Court in an election conservatives, including Elon Musk, had warned could determine the future of civilization. We break it down. Israel is set to begin seizing large areas of the Gaza Strip. This comes as hundreds of residents from the territory flew to Germany. Burmese soldiers fire warning shots on a Chinese aid convoy. The death toll mounts following last Friday's devastating earthquake.
This is NTD News Today, live from our global headquarters in New York City.
Today is Wednesday, April 2nd. I'm Stephanie Cox. President Trump is expected to impose sweeping new reciprocal tariffs on countries around the world today. A White House Rose Garden announcement is scheduled for 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
This is obviously a very big day. He's with his trade and tariff team right now, perfecting it to make sure this is a perfect deal for the American people and the American worker. And the president has a brilliant team of advisors who have been studying these issues for decades. We are focused on restoring the golden age of America and making America a manufacturing superpower.
The new duties are due to take effect immediately after Trump announces them, while a separate 25% global tariff on auto imports will take effect tomorrow. Trump says his reciprocal tariffs plans are a move to even the playing field with other countries. The president has criticized other nations like India and China for charging the U.S. very high tariffs. The format of the duties is unclear amid reports that Trump was considering a 20% universal tariff. With the looming tariffs, which sectors will be most affected? Let's have a look.
Here are some of the sectors impacted by U.S. tariffs. Trump has suggested tariffs on pharmaceutical supplies, including medications. That would be a major change. Over the last few decades, pharmaceuticals have generally been exempt from tariffs. Trump, in March, threatened to put a 200% tariff on wine, cognac, and other alcohol imports from Europe. That was in response to an EU plan to impose tariffs on American whiskey and other products. The U.S. leader has said tariffs on semiconductor chips would also start at 25% or higher and rise substantially over the course of a year, but he hasn't yet clarified when these will come into effect. On March the 12th, Trump increased tariffs on all steel and aluminum imports to 25% and extended the duties to hundreds of downstream products. The U.S. is the world's largest aluminum importer and the second largest steel importer. More than half of those volumes come from Canada, Mexico, and Brazil. At the end of March, Trump unveiled a 25% tariff on imported cars and light trucks. The levy is to be imposed on top of previous duties on imports of finished vehicles, starting on April the 3rd.
Leaders around the world are reacting to the looming tariffs, including Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney.
President Trump is in the process of trying to fundamentally restructure the U.S. economy, and that means that our economy here needs to change dramatically as well.
We do not believe in an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, because that always leads to a bad situation.
On our response, all I can say is that there will be one. It will happen at the appropriate moment after the expected announcement later this evening.
A trade war is in nobody's interests, and the country deserves, and we will take, a calm, pragmatic approach. We have a good deal of trade, a balanced trade relationship with the US, and I believe that our interests are best served by calmly trying to secure a deal which is in our national interest.
I stood up for Australia when they put on aluminium and steel tariffs. I continue to stand up for Australia and have said very.
Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said today that Mexico does not plan to impose retaliatory tariffs on the U.S. She said Mexico will announce a comprehensive program tomorrow, but not a tit-for-tat response. Taiwanese President Lai Ching-te also reacted today. He said Taiwan is an indispensable member of the global supply chain and would defend its company's interests. Trump officials say much of the focus of the tariffs will be on 15 countries that have the highest trade surpluses with the United States. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has referred to the countries as the Dirty 15, but has not named them. According to Census Bureau data, Taiwan is one of those 15. Other countries include China and South Korea, and also the European Union. U.S. auto sales jumped during the first quarter as the prospect of big import tariffs loomed over the market. Here's a breakdown of the numbers.
Figures out Tuesday show General Motors was the biggest winner, with a 17% surge in sales. It saw strong demand for affordable crossovers like its Chevrolet Trax SUV, which is made in South Korea. There were gains too for big Asian names, including Hyundai, Mazda, and Honda. Hyundai Motor North America boss Randy Parker said the past weekend was the best he'd known for a very long time. He credited shoppers rushing to beat the tariffs. Now Donald Trump's new 25% levy on imported cars will kick in from April 3rd.
And this is very modest. And what we're going to be doing is a 25% tariff on all cars that are not made in the United States. If they're made in the United States, there's absolutely no tariff.
Analysts say that looks certain to drive a big spike in prices and a drop in sales as a result. The effect could be most pronounced for lower-cost vehicles, where profit margins are tighter. On Tuesday, Mercedes had to deny reports by Bloomberg that it would halt all imports of its low-end models. Now the fear is that some Americans will be priced out of the market altogether, with the average selling price of a new car already nearing $50,000. If that drives buyers to look for used vehicles instead, then second-hand prices could also jump. Overall, Tuesday's figures show U.S. new vehicle sales for the quarter hit 3.91 million units, or almost 5% up on this time last year.
A federal judge has dismissed with prejudice the corruption case against New York City Mayor Eric Adams. That means the case can't be brought back again. Adams was charged with a 5-count indictment, including bribery and fraud, back in September. He pleaded not guilty. The Justice Department was seeking a dismissal without prejudice, meaning the charges could be refiled at a later date. In his opinion, District Judge Dale Ho said dismissing the case without prejudice would give the perception that the mayor's freedom depended on enforcing the Trump administration's immigration policies. Coming up, Republicans Randy Fine and Jimmy Patronis win their special elections in Florida, what this means for the House GOP. And abortion is at the center of a Supreme Court case today. It looks at whether a state can cut off Medicaid funding to an abortion provider like Planned Parenthood. More on that after the break. Welcome back. A liberal court in Wisconsin remains liberal, the most expensive judicial contest in U.S. history, which attracted the interest of national figures such as Elon Musk and George Soros, has ended with a victory for liberal candidate Susan Crawford. NTD's Daniel Monahan reports on the election and a voter ID referendum.
Justice Susan Crawford handily defeated former Republican Attorney General Brad Schimmel in Wisconsin's Supreme Court election on Tuesday.
And to Ann, although no one can truly fill your shoes, I am incredibly honored to succeed you on the Wisconsin Supreme Court.
Conservatives viewed the race as a battle for the future of the state and the country.
The numbers aren't gonna turn around. They're too bad, and we're not gonna pull this off. So thank you guys from the bottom of my heart.
Elon Musk warned about the importance of the election on Fox News.
Democrats can gerrymander Wisconsin in order to remove two House seats from Republican to Democrat.
Musk warned voters Monday that betting markets showed an 85% to 90% chance of a Crawford victory.
We got to pull a rabbit out of the hat next level.
Crawford won with about 54.5% of the vote to Schimmel's 45.5%.
As a little girl growing up in Chippewa Falls, I never could have imagined that I'd be taking on the richest man in the world.
Both candidates received contributions from tens of thousands of donors across all 50 states. Contributions above $20,000 may not be given directly to a political candidate, but donors can contribute larger amounts through state political parties or political action committees. Musk contributed $3 million to Wisconsin's Republican Party. Billionaires George Soros and J.B. Pritzker contributed $2 million and $1.5 million, respectively, to the state's Democratic Party. Musk also handed out two $1 million checks to signers of a petition against judicial activism. America PAC, which is associated with Musk, heavily supported Schimmel too. The most recent campaign financial filings show the avalanche of funds enabled spending of $21 million by Crawford's campaign and about $10 million by Schimmel's campaign. More than $81 million was spent by other groups in support of the candidates, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. Though Trump won Wisconsin by 1.7 million votes in the fall election, his support did not translate into momentum for Schimmel. Schimmel trailed in the last poll before the election by 7 percentage points. The court now has what is generally acknowledged to be a 4-3 liberal-leaning majority, which will be maintained as Crawford replaces Justice Ann Walsh Bradley, who retires at the end of July. The court is likely to issue critical rulings on voting rights and election rules ahead of the 2026 midterms and the 2028 presidential race, when the state is expected to remain a central battleground. In other Wisconsin election news, voters have approved a constitutional amendment requiring voter ID, reinforcing a 2011 state law. The measure passed in Tuesday's referendum will make it harder to overturn the rule. Supporters say it protects election integrity, while opponents argue it makes it harder for people to vote. President Trump reacted to the news on Truth Social, calling it a big win for Republicans. Trump said it should allow the GOP to win Wisconsin for many years to come. Daniel Monahan, NTD News.
And joining us to discuss is Mike Leon, NTD News contributor and host of the Can We Please Talk podcast. Good to have you with us today, Mike.
Thanks for having me, Steph, as always.
Yeah, National Democrats are saying that they're one step closer to reclaiming the House of Representatives in 2026 after Judge Crawford's win in Wisconsin. Conservatives had warned of the possibility of redistricting in the Democrats' favor. And Judge Crawford did participate in a meeting with liberal donors earlier this year that was pitched as a chance to put two House seats in play. Is there any doubt in your mind that this could be one outcome of this election? And how could that concretely impact Trump's agenda if it is?
Yeah, well, Steph, I would push back, not on your question, but something I heard Elon Musk say in the package, right? Like, judges don't actually gerrymander districts, right? It's the way the districts are drawn up, and then the legal battle happens in the court. So then the judges will decide on whether or not the constitutionality of the gerrymandering of it all. But, I mean, it is a consequence of elections. Elections always have consequences, Steph. Like, this is why so much money was poured into this race. You know, I want to echo something I saw somebody on television in one of these like post-election talking to voters coming out of the precincts and stuff like that. And one of the voters who actually had voted for Donald Trump in the fall and voted for Susan Crawford in this special election runoff, he said, look, if I agree with Trump about there are states issues and we should push these things to the state and the federal shouldn't have intervention in it. He's like, well, then we need to put people in the positions that have, you know, the state's rights at heart. And abortion is going to be on the ballot with respect to Wisconsin. So I think that, you know, this is what happens when you have an election. And I love that Brad Schimmel, by the way, said, you know, the numbers are not there. We're going to respect the results of the election. That's the way, you know, this democratic process happens. But, you know, there could be a consequence of this as it gets down the road. But the judges will decide on that. That just happens to be a liberal majority with respect to the Supreme Court now in Wisconsin, Steph.
Oh, you touched on many great topics I want to get to. But first up, President Trump earlier posted on social media that the parallel Wisconsin referendum that passed requiring voter ID should allow the GOP to win Wisconsin for many years to come. That was his quote. Do you expect a purge of voter rolls in Wisconsin before the midterms? And based on recent voter roll audits, do you expect that to turn up many invalid voters?
Yeah, I mean, we have to see how that plays out. I will say about the voter ID law, and again, I don't know if I necessarily agree with the president's overarching statement, because as we saw in this special election, that nobody in the country pays attention to judicial, you know, elections happening statewide. you know, a Democratic candidate won. But so I don't know if the trend is going that. Just like I know Democrats right now are trying to say, hey, this is emblematic of the first 100 days of the administration. This is what's going to play out in the midterms. I don't think that we can. It's too early to judge any of that stuff. But I will say, look, I think sensible Democrats do want voter ID registration. The problem is always, how long are voting, you know, polling places, you know, staying open until, and what are the forms of identification? Because if this Wisconsin law is in line with, like, for example, here in Florida, like the voter IDs that we do have to present are typical ones that you would present, you know, before a flight, before an airport, like in terms of your passport, in terms of your ID, even if you don't have a driver's license, a state registered ID. So I think I'm in agreement with this passing on the ballot. I don't know if this is something that's going to purge voters or will it turn voters away. But I will say it gives voters time before the midterms to understand, and I would encourage Wisconsin voters out there, go find out what this new law requires in terms of an ID. If you don't have that identification, make sure you get it now before the 2026, obviously, elections that happen in your state.
Right. And just to your earlier point in your first answer, Judge Schimmel, who was defeated, had warned in his campaigning that the Republic was at stake in this election. And he had said that Democrats are taking away one of the branches of government by legislating from the bench. Your response to that?
Yeah, they shouldn't. I mean, you know, look, I think I've been on this network a few times explaining that. Like, the judicial branch interprets laws, right? Judges are not supposed to have a partisan lean. I know people are going to roll their eyes and the connotation behind that, but like, that's the way it's supposed to be. Sure, they have a worldview outside of the courtroom, but they're supposed to be there to be the standard bearer of the way the law is applied. But something that Schimmel said is, you know, once the vote tally is done, like, these are the numbers, math is math, and I do, you know, concede the election race, but is the Republic crumbling or on the ballot? I mean, if you just look at Wisconsin, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has decided on a lot of issues that have come up in the state, Steph. I mentioned abortion in my earlier answer, but there are other things that are going to come up on the Wisconsin ballot. And Wisconsin is a true swing state. I would say it's one of the true purple states that we have in the union where, you know, it went for Donald Trump in 2016, went for Joe Biden in 2020, it went for Donald Trump again in 2024. So these elections do have consequences. And, the judiciary should not be, it should be deciding case law and when cases are brought before the bench. It shouldn't be, you know, writing legislation with respect to, you know, the way it plays out like that. So I get his sentiment and overarching premise and why this election was so important and why you see so much money poured into the state of Wisconsin. But again, we have three branches of government in this country, as well as at the state level and the federal level. And the judiciary now is in the direction of liberals in the Supreme Court in Wisconsin. We're going to see how they decide on some key issues that affect Wisconsin voters from 2025 and beyond.
Yeah, on that point, as we heard earlier, this is the most expensive judicial election in U.S. history. But Judge Crawford, in her victory speech, said that she will be a fair, impartial, common sense judge. Considering the $2 million donation from George Soros, which was used for Crawford's campaign and other large donations, how can voters track whether this new appointee is fulfilling her promise?
Yeah, and that's a great question. And look, the same question should have been asked if Schimmel won, right? Because there was donations coming in from the Republican side and some other PACs that donated money into that area. So This is the questions that are being asked right now of everybody. Like, how are you supposed to be impartial? So it's incumbent upon us as voters to hold these people accountable. The way we hold them accountable is by the decisions that they make. And then when they're up again on the ballot, we make sure that we vote them off the ballot. That's the way this process works. So again, I can't say it enough, Steph. Elections have consequences right now for the voters of Wisconsin. And right now, whether or not they're in agreement with the Trump administration over these first 100 days, et cetera, I think I want to echo what that voter said when they were leaving the polling precinct. And this is, again, somebody that voted for Trump, but also voted for Susan Crawford. It's really about if we truly believe the federal government should not be interjecting into everything and we should let the states decide on certain issues. Well, then Wisconsin last night said that they want a liberal majority in their Supreme Court. And when there are cases that are being fought, they want the liberal perspective that comes with it. Now we have to see how that plays out. If it, you know, negates the state, you know, does it benefit the state, et cetera, over time. And I would encourage voters, don't be short-term memory on this. Have a long-term memory on this and carry it over to the ballot box. If what is playing out in your state and the decisions that Susan Crawford maybe tips the scales on that maybe are things that you are, don't agree with and you've, you know, fought hard for, you know, make sure you, next time that they're up for a vote, you don't put these people in the positions to be voted into office. So that's the way you have your voice, and that's the way it can be heard, especially for the people out there in Wisconsin and the people across all 50 states.
Mm. And Judge Crawford, I believe, now sets out on a 10-year term. So thank you so much for your time today and all of your input. Mike Leon, good to speak with you.
Thanks for having me, Steph.
Next, we head to Florida, where two closely watched elections have just wrapped up. Republicans have kept control of Florida's 1st and 6th congressional districts, giving them a leg up in the U.S. House of Representatives. Here's that story.
Republican Randy Fine edged out Democrat Joshua Wheel in Florida's 6th congressional district Tuesday night. It was a special election to replace Michael Waltz, now President Trump's national security advisor. Democrats were hoping the open seat could help them chip away at the GOP's razor-thin House majority. Wheel ran an aggressive fundraising campaign, raising nearly $9 million compared with Fine's $500,000. The Democratic National Committee also invested heavily in the race, funding poll watchers and greeters on Election Day. But Fine clinched just over 53% of the vote, solidifying GOP control. In his victory speech, he made mention of the efforts Democrats had made.
And today, as I went from polling place to polling place and met paid poll workers from California and Atlanta and Seattle, I told them I hoped they enjoyed their stay in Florida and I wish them safe travels home. Yes. Because this is Trump country.
Still, the margin was thin for the normally heavily Republican district. Mike Waltz won the same seat in November by nearly 30 percentage points. Fine beat Wheel by a margin of 14 points, but he denied claims he had underperformed.
It's a special election. You have to look at the turnout. I mean, there were twice as many people that voted. I don't think you can read much into it. We won by double digits. We're super excited. It was an incredibly powerful victory, given that many of you said I was going to lose over the last week, and clearly we showed that wasn't any risk.
In Florida's first district, it was a similar story. Republican Jimmy Patronis won a special election there to replace former Congressman Matt Gaetz. The margin in this race was even closer. When polls closed, Patronis had received over 52% of the vote, while his opponent, Democrat Gay Valamont, got just under 46%. Here, too, Democrats made a push to flip the seat, raising more than $6 million for Valamont. That's six times more than Patronis raised. But like Fine, Patronis had an endorsement from President Trump. He said in his victory speech, even $6 million cannot overcome one simple Trump post on social media. Fine and Patronis' victories mean the GOP has increased its majority in the House. It now stands at 220 to the Democrats' 213. This will give Republicans more breathing room on key votes.
State Senator Mallory McMorrow announced a bid today for Michigan's open U.S. Senate seat. Senator Gary Peters announced in January he would not seek re-election in 2026. McMorrow has distanced herself from national Democrats in a battleground state Trump won. She said voters are tired of Democrats' gimmicks and has been critical of Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. Democrats are eager to hold on to the Michigan seat next year. Congresswoman Haley Stevens is also considering a run, while Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel has not ruled it out. Meanwhile, Republicans see an opportunity to expand their 53-47 majority in the Senate. Former Congressman Mike Rogers is expected to run again after narrowly losing to Democrat Alyssa Slotkin in 2024. And employees from the Health and Human Services Department began receiving notices of dismissal yesterday. The overhaul is ultimately expected to result in the layoffs of up to 10,000 people. At the NIH, the cuts coincided with Dr. Jay Bhattacharya's first day as director. Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. marked the moment by celebrating Bhattacharya's swearing-in alongside FDA Commissioner Martin Makary. Kennedy declared on social media, "The revolution begins today." Kennedy announced a plan last week to remake the department. The layoffs are expected to shrink Health and Human Services from 82,000 full-time employees to around 62,000. The restructuring aims to merge 28 divisions into 15. A federal judge has indefinitely blocked layoffs from President Trump's administration. The decision affects thousands of probationary federal workers in 19 states and Washington, narrowing a nationwide order issued last month. The ruling by Judge James Bredar places an earlier order that required reinstating 11,000 workers. It now expands it to cover two more agencies, including the Defense Department. Bredar found the administration likely violated federal rules on mass layoffs by failing to provide proper notice. His decision only applies to states that sued, most of which are Democratic-led. The Trump administration has appealed, arguing the firings were lawful. And several federal agencies are giving employees another chance to resign with continued pay, but the workers don't have long to make a decision. In at least four agencies, workers are being offered the option to resign but be paid through the end of September. Depending on the agency, some employees must decide by April 8th, while others have until April 18th. The General Services Administration and the Departments of Agriculture, Defense, and Energy have reopened the controversial deferred resignation program. The original program was offered to about 2 million federal employees who had to accept by February 15-ish. Roughly 75,000 signed up. And the Supreme Court today is hearing arguments on whether South Carolina can cut off Medicaid funding to Planned Parenthood. The dispute centers on whether Medicaid patients can sue to ensure access to any qualified provider. A Planned Parenthood affiliate sued after Governor Henry McMaster sought to block its Medicaid funding. Lower courts ruled in its favor. The Supreme Court's decision, expected by June, could set a major precedent. South Carolina outlaws abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. A federal judge has ordered the Trump administration to temporarily restore legal aid to unaccompanied migrant children. This comes after the administration last month terminated contract with the Acacia Center for Justice. The group provides legal services to children who are in the country illegally without a parent or guardian. Some of the group's subcontractors sued the Trump administration after the contract was terminated, saying 26,000 children were at risk of losing their attorneys. The judge in the case granted a temporary restraining order yesterday, reversing the Trump administration's decision while the case continues. And according to Border Patrol data, March had the lowest Southwest border crossings in history. The agency says there were 7,180 crossings last month. Daily apprehensions also fell to about 230 per day. The agency says the previous administration recorded daily encounters of 5,000 per day. These are preliminary numbers. The CBP says it will have the finalized report in the coming days. And over to weather. Parts of the country are bracing for severe weather today. Forecasters are warning of deadly floods and strong tornadoes in parts of the Midwest and the South. A severe thunderstorm is heading towards the region today. The National Weather Service said at least one tornado was spotted last night in Kansas. The Weather Service says the storm could bring life-threatening flash flooding starting today. It warned nearly 43 million people from northern Texas to Michigan could be at risk of high winds. The storm comes as Michigan is still recovering from a weekend ice storm. New York City's composting. That's for another time. Coming up, Burmese soldiers fire warning shots on a Chinese aid convoy. The death toll mounts following last Friday's devastating earthquake. And Israel is set to begin seizing large areas of the Gaza Strip. This comes as hundreds of residents from the territory flew to Germany. More on all that right after this break. I'm Stephanie Cox, and this is World Watch. Israel announces the expansion of military operations in Gaza. Russia adds 160,000 men to its army as accusations of ceasefire violations emerge. And the death toll surpasses 3,000 after the 7.7 magnitude earthquake rocked Burma, also known as Myanmar. Israel announced a major expansion of military operations in Gaza today. It says large areas of the enclave would be seized and added to its security zones. There would also be large-scale evacuations of the population. Defense Minister Israel Katz says evacuations would take place from areas where there was fighting. He said the operation would clear out Hamas terrorists and infrastructure. Katz's statement did not make clear how much land Israel intended to seize or whether the move represented a permanent annexation of territory. The Israeli military had already issued evacuation warnings to people living around the southern city of Rafah and towards the Sea of Khan Yunis. This comes as Israel killed a senior Hezbollah terrorist in Lebanon yesterday. Russia's investment envoy might visit the United States. The Kremlin says it's for talks with members of the Trump administration. He would be the most senior Russian official to visit since Moscow invaded Ukraine in 2022. Meanwhile, in Russia, one of the largest rounds of conscription to the country's military for several years is underway. Russia will see 160,000 men join the country's armed forces. That's 10,000 more than last year's increase, and a rise of more than 15,000 compared to 3 years ago. This comes as Russia and Ukraine accuse each other of launching new attacks on energy facilities. Such attacks would be in violation of a temporary ceasefire arranged by the U.S. Both sides now say they're providing details of the alleged violations to the U.S. And the death toll from last Friday's massive earthquake in Burma has surpassed 3,000. The 7.7 magnitude quake toppled thousands of buildings, collapsing bridges and splitting roads. Burma state media reported more than 4,600 people were injured. The number of casualties is expected to rise. Most of the reports so far have come from Mandalay, Burma's second largest city, which was near the epicenter of the earthquake. The United Nations says there were more than 28 million people in the six regions affected by the disaster. The Southeast Asian nation has been in a civil war since the military ousted the elected government in 2021. According to the United Nations, more than 3 million people have been displaced from their homes since then. And civil war and instability in Burma have highlighted the challenge of delivering aid to survivors of Friday's devastating earthquake. The nation's military junta said its troops fired warning shots at a Chinese Red Cross aid convoy last night amid recovery efforts. A junta spokesperson said the Chinese Red Cross had not informed authorities it was in the conflict zone. The military junta fired shots after the vehicle allegedly failed to stop. The military has struggled to govern Burma following its 2021 coup. The conflict has battered the country's economy and reduced basic services and health care. Rebels have accused the military of conducting airstrikes even after the quake. The military has dismissed accusations that it has committed widespread atrocities. And the deadline for the sale of Panama ports and dozens of worldwide ports arrives today, with no certainty the sale will go through. The Chinese Communist regime has relentlessly criticized Hong Kong conglomerate Hutchinson for offering up its Panama ports for sale to U.S. firm BlackRock since the deal was first announced. CK Hutchinson controls two strategic facilities on both ends of the Panama Canal. The deal would also give BlackRock control of ports in nearly two dozen countries for a total of $22.8 billion. But CK Hutchinson would still control the ports it owns in Hong Kong and mainland China. The Chinese regime has called the sale unpatriotic and has tried to stifle it. President Trump sees control of the Panama Canal as a matter of national security and has not ruled out the use of force to reclaim it. The Chinese military staged a second day of exercises around Taiwan today, launching live fire strikes in the East China Sea and practicing blockade operations near crucial shipping lanes to the east and west of the island. Here's a closer look.
China escalated its military drills around Taiwan on Wednesday. It held long-range live-fire drills in the East China Sea. The exercises involved precision strikes on simulated targets of key ports and energy facilities, according to China's Eastern Theater Command. China gave a codename for the first time to its war games, which started Tuesday, Straight Thunder 2025A. Chinese rhetoric has been building up against Taiwan President Lai Ching-te, who won election last year and who rejects Beijing's sovereignty claims over Taiwan. The war games come after U.S. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's Asia visit, during which he repeatedly criticized Beijing. The United States, which remains Taiwan's most important international backer and main arms supplier despite the lack of formal diplomatic ties, condemned China's exercises on Tuesday. In a statement, the U.S. State Department said China's aggressive military activities and rhetoric toward Taiwan only serve to exacerbate tensions and put the region's security and the world's prosperity at risk. Japan and the European Union also expressed concern. While the Taiwan government has denounced China for holding the drills, for most Taiwanese, it's just another normal day. Taiwan has been under threat of Chinese invasion since 1949. Though Chen Yifan, an assistant professor of diplomacy and international relations at Taiwan's Tam Kung University, says Taiwanese should be more aware of the threats coming from the mainland.
I think as a Taiwanese people, we have to worry about this. Because right now it's like, you know, we are in a water pot and they are boiling the water gradually, step by step. But the problem right now is because the administration here in Taiwan, they are actually emphasizing, they are trying their best to monitor all the situation. They do not really reveal all the reality to the public. So this is why also the public, we do not know why we should worry about the situation, because we don't have the sufficient information and transparency about the reality of the battleground.
Chen says China's drills may work in favor of the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, which may use the crisis to rally local support ahead of domestic elections next year.
In the Middle East, Israel has said they're going to begin seizing large areas of the Gaza Strip. Here to talk more about this is NTD National Security Correspondent and former counterintelligence agent Jason Perry. Jason, can you explain what's happening here?
Sure, and thanks for the question. Well, just today, Israel said they're going to have a major expansion of military operations in the Gaza Strip. And Israel's defense minister, Israel Katz, said they would be seizing, quote, large areas of the territory that will be added to the Israel security zone. Now, it appears this will be similar to how Israeli forces are stationed inside Syria, and also how Israeli forces are stationed inside Lebanon near the border as well. And I think this move will help the security of Israel, and it could be a step closer to bringing the 59 hostages home. Now, remember, not too long ago, President Trump had suggested that the U.S. take over the Gaza Strip and have residents leave the territory. Now, it appears that Israel will be the one taking over large parts of the territory, at least for now.
Well, there has been some talk about residents being able to leave the Gaza Strip if they wanted to. Are there any updates on that?
Well, actually, hundreds of residents from the Gaza Strip recently flew to Germany. That's according to the Israeli Minister of Interior. And he was at an airport in Israel yesterday. Let's hear what he had to say.
I arrived here today at Ramon Airport in Eilat to examine and verify the voluntary departure of Gaza residents. Another flight today, and more than 10 flights departed in the previous period, today to Germany, a voluntary departure to ensure the development of the region.
So it appears that these people left the Gaza Strip voluntarily. And I think this is a pretty big step because Arab countries in general have resisted accepting new Palestinian refugees. However, Israel also said that some Palestinians were flown to the UAE and also some flew to Romania. Now, I'm sure there are probably some residents in Gaza who want to stay in their land, even with the war going on and Israel blocking food from the territory. But I'm sure there are also some who would like to move to a more peaceful country.
Speaking of peaceful countries, Lebanon seemed to be somewhat peaceful during the ceasefire, but Israel has begun striking targets in Beirut again. What's going on here?
Well, it appears that this started less than a week ago when terrorists in southern Lebanon fired rockets toward Israeli territory. And soon after, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu released a statement saying that Israel would not allow firing at their communities. And he said, quote, not even a trickle. So since then, Israeli forces have launched multiple strikes in Lebanon's capital of Beirut, which they say are targeting Hezbollah terrorists. Now, Israel has said that the Lebanese government is responsible for everything happening on their territory, and that apparently it seems like they're still not able to prevent terrorists from firing rockets at Israel. However, the Lebanese army did say they found the launch site where those initial rockets were fired from. And they said they are investigating to find out who was responsible.
All right. Thank you, Jason, for those updates.
Thank you, Steph.
Coming up, Hollywood is mourning the loss of the Top Gun and Batman star Val Kilmer, who's died at the age of 65. His daughter said he had been suffering from pneumonia. A new exhibition in London gives the public a peek into the history of Britain's domestic intelligence service. A gallery of artifacts tells the story of a dangerous game. Welcome back. Some sad news out of Hollywood. Top Gun and Batman Forever star Val Kilmer has died at age of 65. In a statement to the New York Times, Kilmer's daughter said the actor died yesterday. She said the cause of his death was pneumonia. Kilmer was diagnosed with throat cancer in 2014. His cancer had left him struggling to speak. He had chemotherapy treatment and tracheotomies, making it difficult to breathe and permanently impacting his voice. Kilmer began his acting career on the stage and transitioned to film, starring in comedies and spoofs. But his breakout role was Iceman in the 1986 Top Gun film. Some of his other big roles include Batman in the 1995 Batman Forever and Jim Morrison in the Oliver Stone's The Doors. And his final film was 2023's Top Gun Maverick, where he reprised his role as Iceman. He's survived by their two children, Mercedes and Jack. The head of Britain's spy agency has launched a new exhibition of its archive, shedding light on a covert 115-year-old legacy. Visitors can separate fact from fiction in a gallery of artifacts and espionage. NTD's Andrew Thomas has more on the history of the UK's domestic counterintelligence service.
This Saturday, a new installation in London will provide a glimpse into the shadows of the United Kingdom's MI5. Steve Burgess, head of exhibitions at the National Archives, says the exhibition is an immersive experience.
So together with MI5, we explore the 115-year story, all about keeping Britain safe, keeping the country safe. And as you enter the gallery, you'll feel like you're stepping into the hidden world of MI5.
MI5 Official Secrets has been curated over several years to give people the chance to see equipment and other artifacts used by spies.
You'll see top secret files, personal memos, gadgets, photographs, interviews, confessions, a whole range of things.
This lemon was fatal for a German spy, Karl Müller, who came to Britain in 1915. It helped to convict him because Karl Müller was using lemon juice to write secret messages in between the lines of an otherwise innocuous letter.
The letter was intercepted, marking the beginning of the end for Mueller.
He was tracked down, tried, found guilty, and executed by firing squad at the Tower of London.
Espionage is about secrets, both stealing and keeping them. London's new exhibition gives the public a peek into the spy game.
Many people are just really fascinated by espionage, you know, motives, the motives of these spies, you know, why did they betray their country, you know, all those sort of aspects. And the files, if you look into the files, perhaps you can get some of the answers to these questions.
MI5 Official Secrets runs until September 28th. Andrew Thomas, NTD News.
Next, a school principal pulls an April Fool's fast one on a class of students, tricking them into thinking they'll have an additional year of high school and going viral in the process.
Watch students get schooled by a principal's epic April Fool's prank. 11th grade students at Australia's Wollongong Performing Arts High School were gathered for an announcement from their principal.
This news will affect you all directly.
But little did they know, it was gonna be a doozy.
A mandatory year 13 has been added to your educational pathway. And therefore, you will no longer be graduating in 2026.
News of an extra year of high school left the students understandably shocked and stunned, and Principal Kylie Woods deftly left them hanging just long enough before setting the record straight.
One other vital piece of information. Wollongong High School of the Performing Arts this year was selected to be a part of the 2025 April Fool's Day joke. That you are most certainly graduating in 2026.
Speaking of news going over like a lead balloon, a massive metallic-colored inflatable was captured doing just that in New York City. No, it wasn't an April Fool's prank, but what was left after a recent high-profile event where EV manufacturer Lucid Motors adorned this meatpacking district building with a UFO-looking balloon to help them reveal their newest vehicle, which is called, and I still am not pulling your leg, the Gravity. I swear this thing writes itself.
All right, stay with us and we'll bring you more news right after this break.